of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Pro 777 Radio. This is episode 577. Jason Lindgren is with me, as is Dylan Sicoccio for, I don't know, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th time. I'm not sure. He's got a new book out, and it's called True. Actually, that's not entirely true. It's an acronym of the actual title, which is The Real Universal Empire. A lot of unique ideas in this book. A lot of interesting ideas. Certainly going to piss off a lot of people who are holding tight to mud floods and Tataria and all other points of view. But for my money, I'm interested in people taking unique approaches. I think everybody can agree that what we've been told is unacceptable. And I think further, everyone can agree that we're not exactly quite sure what has happened in our actual history. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a fine good morning.
All right. Welcome, Dylan. And I've got to thank you. I will read it on the air. Once again, you have included us in your acknowledgments. It says, thank you to those who gave me the platform over the last year or directly funded this work through my Substack, whether you agreed or disagreed with the premise. And in the acknowledgments is Crow777, Jason Lindgren, and Rose777. So thank you so much, my friend.
It's my pleasure. You know, there's only sexy people acknowledged in my book. And so, you know, you guys all made the cut. And we came here to chew bubblegum and talk about ancient history. And we're all out of bubblegum.
And ancient history.
Yeah. Hey, Crow, what's the you had a really good graphic one time. You call the Common Era or the AD, you have a really funny abbreviation for it. I think it's the same abbreviation, but it's like a funny meaning.
I don't remember. You got to be more specific.
It's almost like you called like AD, like, I don't know what it is, but it's like after common sense or something. There's something funny.
I forgot. I know what you're, that was way back. Yeah. What is it? After Dominion was one of the, but no, I don't remember what I said.
But anyway,
this relates to exactly what's going on, because the whole AD-BC thing was a complete subterfuge to screw everybody up, to make sure the calendars are inaccurate, and what's more, to make it damn near impossible to track back through times. Not only are you jumping from like solar calendars back into lunar calendars to solely lunar calendars, but then you get to this bizarre dividing line called BC and everything starts going backwards. And of course, they didn't include a year one to further mess things up.
Mission successful.
Yeah, to say the least. In the book, and I know you've read it, and I know you took issue with it, but I love that book, The Worship of Augustus Caesar. So this man's educated back in the day, I'm guessing the 1800s. I mean, a real education back in the day. And he's saying no one can figure this out because even the chronologists are pulling their hair out.
Yeah, I didn't take exception to it. I just want to make that clear. The things that I have a problem with have nothing to do with the man. It's the attempt to chronologize mythology, but not in a useful mythological way. The problem with all of this stuff is they've passed off these scripture, these mythological texts that are nothing more than forgeries and books of bearing false witness as history. And that's why everybody doesn't know what happened. And nobody's been impacted by this more than ancient Italian people and subsequently Europeans, because all of our languages come from the early Etruscan-Phoenician. And one of the premises, so one of the things that I don't know if you saw this, but I cited you in the book, because when we got off of the last, this is actually our 9th time. The last time we got off, since then, I've been looking at archaeology books, specifically Etruscology. And I say Etruscan because it's a Latin word, Etruscus or Etrusci, or sometimes it's written Etrusci with an H for Etruscan. That SC functions like an SH, and I don't like the Etruscan, and I don't like how people say Tuscany. These are all modern Italian problems, and you see how that occurs because of the transposition that happens due to the interacting with other cultures. But you said something. One of the things we didn't talk about was basically the crux of the matter, which is none of the ancient Italian languages are translatable, meaning they have zero to do with Indo-European or anything else like Greek has. And I texted you that one time. I was like, they're not Indo-European. It was like right after we did the show. I didn't realize that. And you said, language is what it is. And once you know that, there's no getting around it. And did you get to a chance to see the last chapter, Crow, where I showed that demonstration that people did of the Irish language being Punic?
Yeah. So just to catch people up, when he's saying Etruscan, you're going to have been taught in school Etruscan, right? And Tuscany. That's what you're going to have in your mind. But chapter 8, titled Mythological Imperialism, he quotes me, Crow 777, language is what it is. And yes, I did read the last chapter, but Dylan, I also appreciate how your early chapters match the Deccan. Like chapter 7 is in the 70s, page numbers, 8 is in the 80s. But what were you going to say?
Totally unintentional. I didn't even know that. That's
kind of lined up. I noticed it. It goes all the way up to 100 doing that, which is interesting. And it also informs a reader that it's bite-sized pieces. It's not too difficult. You know, you're looking at 10 pages a chapter on average or something like that. But what were you going to say about the last chapter?
Well, if you look at it or if you have it with you.
I do.
My goal with this book was to be as least technical as possible, because the more technical you get, the more facts and logic you get, the less interested people become. They operate on, you know, kind of like the emotional vibe. And so what I really want to do is to create a work that was not controversial, other than, you know, the conclusions can implicate some controversial things, but I didn't want the book to be controversial like that. Like, I wanted you to be able to give this to a 10-year-old, someone who's homeschooling, just to equip them. And one of the things that I wanted to lead the book off with, but it's too technical, is just the fact that if you look at all of the early British languages, they're all Italian-based. And specifically from Sicilian Phoenician, which they call Punic. And one of the premises that I've seeded over the years with Spirit World is the fact that the word Phoenician is Italian in its description. The root of it comes from Etruria, which is Etruscan, which is puni, P-U-N-I, and it pertains to purple things. And in Latin, they say poni, P-O-E-N-I, but it's like a ligature, the O-E ligature. And that's the root of Phoenician. And because of the interchange, you know, you have Feni in Irish. So it's the F, the P. You know, I think the very first episode we did gave me a career when we broke down the interchangeability of the letters and the etymology of bishop, right? With the root, sharing it with fish and pish, pishis, right? Pisces, what we say. So that is all Italian. And when you look at the affinity of the language, you see that the Irish has so many words that are Punic. It makes it unmistakable, which are Sicilian Phoenician, that they're not from that origin. And one of the things for people who study these languages, I'll give you a couple of them. Armorican or Armoric, which is northwestern France. You'll have the Manx language, the Welsh, the Cornish, especially, and the Irish and Scottish. And the more isolated a people is, whether they're on an island or in hard to get places in mountains, the more their language stays closer to its original form. And for whatever reason, whether the Irish is the oldest or the Irish has just been able to preserve themselves, insulate themselves from the transposition that occurs, you see that the Irish is closest to its original languages by those who peopled Britain, which are undoubtedly Etruscan-Phoenician. And they're not, the Celtic people are not Asiatic. They're not Sub-Saharan African. They're not Indian. You know, they're none of these cultures. They have a very strict phenotype. And the reason, not strict, but the earlier you go back, they have a phenotype. And so do the Italians. And the reason I put my nono, the patriarch of my family that came over here to America, is because I think I've talked about it in my books. I don't know that I've ever told you guys on the show, but I'm from the Caesar family. And if you look at the man on the book and you superimpose his face over the only bust of Julius Caesar that was ever made while he was alive, called the Tusculum portrait, you'll see that it's the exact same phenotype. And the problem with that is he had blonde hair and blue eyes. And his mother was a Conti. So he's from the black nobility in Italy, which, if you look at the Conti family, they produced 4 popes. The only family that produced more popes is the Orsini family. And the Orsini family also intermarried with the Conti family. So depending on which Conti I'm descended from, ultimately, I might be technically an Orsini. I don't know.
Which I have been told by insider sources that I can't, you know, I've promised I won't ever talk about this on the air, but I will say the Orsini family is among the richest in the world to this day. By the way, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Caesar, I think it's much closer to the actuality because I read a lot about Rome, and I forget the lady's name. There was this just fantastic novel from the time of Sulla all the way up through Pompey that recreated, she did research for 11 years to recreate Rome. It's really quite a good read, but in that she tells you, oh, well, Caesar means, it's referring to his dark hair, right? So I think that the legend has purposefully steered away from the genetic reality that was actually there. And I have seen accounts where they're saying that Caesar was blonde and blue. By the way, your great, great, whatever it is, grandfather here is quite a handsome fellow.
Yeah.
on the cover.
And he looks Germanic / Celtic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing his eyes are blue, right?
Yeah. And yeah. I think a lot of this is to keep Europeans like fighting, like what you look at with the angle, and I didn't come from it with this angle. I came from it from the language angle especially based on what, you know, that quote you always stuck with me. I know it was just a text, but it was fire, right? It just always stuck with me. And it is. And the Celtic and Etruscan and Rome and all the, so if you look at the lower levels of education teach us that Latin came from Greek. But the higher echelon of scholars, they all talk about how Latin is a lingua franca that was developed by people in Italy, like the Umbrians, the Samnites, the Oceans, the Etruscans, all that interacting with each other. And the reason I bring this up is because, just like you said, if you type in the etymology of Caesar, no matter how you do it, they give you every result except for the truth. And if you would want the truth, I would read... I include the citation from Suetonius, but I'll say it right now. He wrote in Latin, Aesar, idest, reliqua parse Caesaris nomine Etruscia lingua, Deus vocatur, meaning Aesar, that is the remaining part of the name Caesar, is in the Etruscan language, the denomination of God or the name of God. And if you that weren't enough, I can have another citation, which is Sol in Etruscia etiam lingua, Aesar vocatus est, which is the sun in the Etruscan language is called Aesar. So that's the connection between the sun and God. And by putting that C in front of it, it's like a centurion. It's like the soldiers of God. And that my family is very, I wouldn't say religious, but they are very devoted to God. And a lot of the things we do in life, it's for our creator. And this goes back to the Etruscan lifestyle. Like God is our centurion, right? And we didn't look at death as an end to anything. We looked at it just similar to the Egyptians, that it's a continuation. And that's why the only cultures you'll see with these tombs that have this stuff that's like prepping them for the next world is Etruscans and Egyptians. And there's a mummy that was found called the Zagreb mummy, Zagreb. This is kind of technical, but it's important. There's a script that mummy was wrapped in. And it's from Luxor, and it's wrapped in Etruscan script. And so when you look at how this is possible, well, according to the Greek general Kanon, the Phoenicians made Luxor their or Egyptian Thebes, as it was called, their capital back when they possessed the Empire of Asia. And so what I'm showing is that because there is no affinity, and they can't even translate any of these Italian languages anymore, they never could because there's not enough remaining. There's only like 1,500 inscriptions remaining, but I think less than 5 of them are over 100 words long. So that's a challenge. They can't translate them. The only thing that they can get is the gist of it because some of those words are existing in the Latin still. And it shows the succession or Latin as a result of that. And I think what's being covered up is a lot of the stuff we've talked about with the Roman Empire. I've just proved that Aesar and Aesar are both Etruscan words, and that family who contributed to the Roman Empire were Etruscan. They were not from Turkey, because if they were, they would have some affinity to Greek, and they don't. And that's the crux of the matter. It's showing They've told us that Europeans come from India or north of the Black Sea, but those Scythians are admittedly descended in this construct, if you believe it as historical, which I don't know that I do, but they're descended from the Pelasgians. And according to Marsilius of Lesbos, the rest of the world called the same people both Tyrrhenians and Pelasgians, and their languages are the same because Pelasgian is of Phoenician original. So that means the Etruscan language is Phoenician.
So let me float this idea at you. And by the way, to finish my last thought, the lady who wrote the Masters of Rome series, her name is Colleen McCullough. They're basically novels, but they do a very good job, regardless of what you want to think about the histories. And she does recreate all the big battles that mainstream history talks about. But the fabrication of how Rome operated as a city. But let me float this idea. By the way, it's Colleen McCullough, Masters of Rome. In the Bible, everyone's familiar with the Tower of Babel. And it is my point of view, but that's pretty much exactly what's been done to us. By the time you get to English, you have lost so much nuance out of language. And it's so kind of incomplete that half of the really complex ideas and words, we just pull it from another country. Like reconnaissance. Well, that's not an American word. All these words that we pull in because English didn't have it. But I think what the real tell is there's no gender. By the time you get to English, one of the basic tenets of languages was there were gender ideas in it. So what I'm putting forward to you, Dylan, is it feels to me like probably the Roman Church actually pulled a Tower of Babel as they took over and Christianized parts of the world. We see the example here in America where when they're taking the supposed American Indians, well, you can't speak your language anymore. By the way, all your children have to go to this school, which is an actual example of how it could be implicated. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, there's something to that. And actually, going back to my work in that, I say my conclusions and stuff are not that controversial. I just don't accept the cause of this being Jehovah, right? Or Yahovah, Godhovah. That's how you really, if you talk to someone from Israel, how they really would say Tetragrammaton, it's Hova, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. It could be transliterated as I-E-U-E, I-E-V-E, but they say Jehovah. That's not the proper way to say it, but encoded in the seven-letter word is Yah, Yod-Heh, and then Hova, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Tetragram. So it's God, Tetragrammaton. I don't think Jehovah caused this at the Tower of Babel. I think it's exactly as you said. It's a monkish system of despots that come from Alexandria, as admitted by Eusebius, who conceded that the early Therapeuti were Christians and their epistles and gospels are their writings are our epistles and gospels. And that's one of the things Robert Taylor exposed. And he wasn't even the one that admitted it, but he exposed that one of his adversaries cited Eusebius and admitted that. And he's like, I cannot believe they just gave us that. It's like, that's the end of your argument, right? But even before that, you'll see that these scriptures were used in older mystery school traditions. And all of the early fathers were members of the mysteries. Even if you look at like the apology of Justin Martyr to Emperor Hadrian, however you say that, he conceded. He's like, well, you guys have your Mercury, who is the Logos and the messenger of God. And we have our Jesus, who is the Logos and the messenger of God.
So he's referring, just so everybody knows, when you said Robert Taylor, you're referring to the man who wrote The Devil's Pulpit. There are two editions, but the first, in my view, is better than the second, though they're both quite valuable.
I'm not even referring to The Devil's Pulpit, Crow. He's done a lot of other works. So if you haven't read the other works.
Oh, I've read one or two of them, and I didn't get all the way through. Well, I damn near did The Devil's Pulpit, but which one are you citing?
I don't know off the top of my head, but he's done a lot of he's got like four or five. All of these are going to be in my book for those who want the shortcut, because having to read like these 300 to 500 page books can be tedious. But Robert Taylor is one of the most special people in the world to me, because for a long time I was embarrassed about my family's history, because grew up thinking that Romans persecuted Christians and all this other stuff. And turns out that none of that ever happened, because it was made up. And all the stuff they used to rely on, like these inscriptions and stuff, it turned out to be forgery and no one cites them anymore. Like these ideas that Nero tortured Christians and all that shit, that was made up in Spain.
Let's put a modern context, because when you say things like that, people who were raised Christian and still practicing, they start to shut down. But let me make a couple modern points here. Let's take something that everyone knows as phony, as baloney. How about Madonna? All right. Can we all agree that that's an entertainment construct? And yet she takes her iconic single name from biblical ideas. Does she not? Well, recently she's been out doing like rituals on stage and literally verbatim reading the book of Revelation. And here's my point. So if these religious ideas are valid, then how in the hell could someone like Madonna be reading Revelations, informing you it's the end time? In other words, does she have some special phone to God or her producers or her handlers that say, yep, second coming's on the way, go down there on that stage and start reading Revelation? Or is it the other way around? Is it a manipulation they know has teeth? Because it intermixes with the religious traditions that many have been brought up on. And so these are I don't know if I explained that very well, Dylan, but the Reverend Robert Taylor risked his life.
He was the best. So to be a Christian, the etymology of that word means good fellow. That's what it means.
And there was a secret society called the Goodfellows.
And that's why in our thing, someone's a good fellow. And, you're familiar with some of the people in the life in New England, I presume, because you're up there, at Federal Hill and stuff. So just a funny, fun fact that my grandfather on the book, his grandson-in-law was the private chef to Raymond Patriarca, the head of the New England crime family. So like this stuff goes back a long time. He's older than Cosa Nostra. But the point is, it is a system. And that's why Italians have been historically so good at it, is because the system is more important than the man. And it didn't matter who you were. If you broke the rules, that was it. And that's how you keep something consistent generation throughout generation. And the softer you get and you start allowing nepotism to creep in, and well, this guy broke the rules, but his father is the boss, or his father, and you let him slide, then the whole system fails. And that's because of moral relativism. And that's what you see happening in America. Our rules are no longer enforced. Like the framework of our Constitution is almost wholly irrelevant, and people do bad stuff and they get off scot-free, and people do nothing and they get life. But to back you up, Robert Taylor, two simple examples. You see in the Gospel of Luke, right? It claims that Augustus Caesar taxed the whole world. Nowhere in the history of Rome, and nowhere in the history of the world, although they're trying to with the cryptocurrency, has anybody ever been able to tax the whole world. You will find no accounts of such a thing. It's bearing false witness. Now, I don't even know that Augustus Caesar was a real person, right? But the family name is real and the family's real. And my Nono looks exactly like Julius. If you superimpose, you can see they have the same phenotype. So people probably played those parts. And the Caesar name, modern Italians say Cesare now. Caesar name still exists and it's a big family. But the other thing is, nobody in Rome, it's the most libertine country in the ancient world, libertine city. Nobody ever got persecuted specifically for their religion at a official level, right? There's none of that. And so for anyone who wanted to debunk that, you would have to provide like a law or some sort of edict instructing the persecution of Christians. And it's just like another certain event that you see this pattern that we won't talk about, but you know what I'm talking about, in the 20th century, where other people were claimed to be persecuted or exterminated, and there's not one order given that command in the historical record. So what you see is people taking advantage of crises. And I think that's what happened probably with the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, because that region is an important part, a port city, and connects to a river and all that stuff. So you can't lose something like Pompeii, et cetera, and not suffer economic consequences. So I think what happened is that occurred, and then that was the perfect time for the Egyptian monks, also known as the Therapeuti or Jewish Buddhist sect that became the Christians, to come over to Europe under the guise of like help. and aid. And we see this with America and all these freaks going over to like places like Haiti after devastation and exploiting them and taking advantage of them. I think that's probably what happened in Italy, because none of this really benefits the Italian people or the Europeans abroad. And the reason I connect all of the European cultures to Italy, like a diaspora of Italy, is through their language, right? All of their alphabets are, even the earliest letters you have in Britain are deformed Roman. They call them Saxon, but they're Roman. All that early architecture that is called Saxon is actually Roman. And when you look at somebody like the Basque people, who they talk about, their language is not unlike anything else. Well, I mean, if you listen to them speak and you understand Spanish, you can see that it is some form of Spanish. And what they called it, the royal class, you know, and really learned people like Thomas Assel, they called it Sicilian Phoenician. But when you look at it, it's using Etruscan words. For example, the word Aita, A-I-T-A, means father in Basque. Well, you'll find that in Etruscan tombs as an epithet for Shuri, the wolf, the guy with the wolf on his head, right? And it's kind of like Lycian and Apollo. So why, if nobody knows where you're from and what your language is, why are you using Etruscan words? And I'll tell you, it's because the original settlers of that area were Etrusco-Phoenician. And Phoenician is, they're from Italy. They're not from the Orient. That's my conclusion. I could be wrong, but that's my opinion.
You should know. I can add a little bit there. I know for a fact from being told firsthand that aristocracy that went through that kind of much different education and are told many things that we are not in public school settings, that they're told that when Atlantis went down, the Basque culture, you know, came ashore from that. That's what they are taught. And I know that for certain.
Yeah. And I'm open to a lot of things, but the problem with Atlantis is there's no evidence of it ever having existed other than an account that's used by Plato.
Well, it's become so mythical that almost everything you hear is like, you know, aliens or something, right? It's legendary, all of it.
Yeah. And so I try to, you know, and part of the reason I think for this is because people will find something that's like an ancient artifact. And rather than letting the artifact tell you what it's from, where it is, they use their religious beliefs to try to say, oh, this must be Atlantis or this must be Troy. I know this, like they claim to have found Troy, but when you look at like the gold and stuff that they had, the coins, they were all like Persian and stuff. There was nothing Greek. What they call Troy, I don't think they is actually Troy. And they tried to pretend it was just for the sake of the name, you know, like
that
they
gold
get that
necklace that they put on show. You're saying that that's not Greek at all?
Well, I don't know for sure, but when I saw like the original guy that was found, the guy who funded that was a wealthy entrepreneur or something like it.
Sketchy. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about his character. I'm not here to talk about his character, but they passed off one of the hoards of gold that they found there as like a Trojan hoard or whatever. But it turned out it was just from like Persia. And Persian culture is like the last culture that got the use of the letters. So like there's certain things that if you know about language, you can exploit certain claims that people are making. Like when people say, like, they'll talk about the Vinci tablets or they'll talk about the Ora Linda. If you look at the language, it's forgery. Like they're copying stuff and they're doing it wrong because they don't realize that at that time, they only had 12 letters or 13 letters and you're using a 22 letter alphabet. You know, they goof up all the time. And certain things that will help you is like even with Roman, Italians didn't use the letter G. So like they use C to function like that. So Caesar is actually Caesar. And you'll see even like Italians still today, they'll say things like, why do they pronounce that with the G? Like Gabagool, and it's spelled with C's. You know, like there's just some certain things that are still embedded in our culture from history.
Which isn't even close. What's the word that's a lunch meat that they call Gabagool, but the word that they're mimicking doesn't sound anything like that.
Yeah, it looked like Capicola.
Yeah, Capicola. That's right.
But Caesar G's.
Well, I like the idea that you were referencing. Just so people know, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, Luke 2, maybe, where Augustus Caesar is mentioned. And basically, so we can all agree, whatever you want to think about scripture, it's been around for a long time. But in the biblical passage from Luke, wasn't Luke the doctor? I think anyhow, It says basically that back in those days, an order or a decree of some kind went out from Augustus Caesar, that everyone, the entire world, would be taxed. And I remember this because if you look at the different versions, like you might go to the NIV or something else, it starts to swap in the word census and other things. And I remember that, you know, so you might agree that if there's a census, the reason they're doing it is so they can tax people, but it's kind of a dodge, isn't it? And so actually, is there a census going on? Or is that, you know, which is true and why don't you say it? My point is we have that relatively ancient account of the powers of Rome aiming to tax every single life in this world, everyone everywhere. And that reflects on what we see now, doesn't it, Dylan?
100% does. And actually, while you were speaking, I remembered that I had a screenshot of from my book that I was sharing from another person. I actually have what the first paragraph Robert Taylor had to say about it, if you want me to read it.
Yeah, I'm down with anything Robert Taylor, man. He is the man.
Yeah, I love him. And he said, it happens, however awkwardly enough, that there is no mention in any ancient Roman or Greek historian of any general taxing of people all over the world or the whole Roman Empire in the time of Augustus, nor of any decree of the emperor for that purpose. And this is an event of such character and magnitude as to exclude even the possibility of the Greek and Roman historians omitting to have mentioned it, had it ever really happened.
So let's just take the point of view for a moment that Robert Taylor was right. If Robert Taylor is right, what that tells you is that probably the Vatican or Vatican scribes put this idea in because they had control. They did all the early translations. I don't accept that the New Testament was written in the language they claim. They say, oh, it was written in Greek. Oh, but we lost that copy. But check it out. We got this exact copy, luckily, of the original evidence that we lost. I am convinced that it was done in Latin. And there's a lot of I think Robert Taylor puts a lot forward. But the point I'm making is if Robert Taylor is correct and that there are no ancient evidences of any kind of such a thing, then that means that the powers that be were putting this in to make the world think that taxation had been going on forever. It was normal. And now what do we see? They actually do want to control and tax everyone in the world. So, I mean, what do you think, Dylan?
That's the implication. So this is the scary shit that I haven't even thought about, because my goal is just to establish as many facts as possible with this. But that's what I was kind of alluding to. There are implications, and you just hit on something that I hadn't even thought about. And it's like grooming everybody to be taxed unjustly. Right. And that's creepy. And the other implication is, and I'll back you up real quick on what you said, but I just want to say the other implication is, for those who learn how to read the ancient Italian systems, which are alien to the rest of the world, you will find no mention during the height of their velocicracy. It's like the rulers of the sea. Nobody mentions anything from any of the biblical narratives when they would have been mentioned. And they're existing at a time that people would have talked about it, right? Because the height of their empire is going from like the 8th century to like the 4th century BC, allegedly. That's if you trust the dating process, which I don't. Dating is unreliable. They dated rocks that came out of Mount St. Helens 30 years ago as being millions of years old when they were only formed 30 years ago. So they're not reliable on any dating. It's all guesswork. It's not science. And the ramifications are that everything you've been taught as history as a result of religious scripture and narrative is a product of the common era, and you won't find it in the ancient world. That's why you would cover up the real Italian history and call it this Roman stuff. And that's why I tried to emphasize that the Caesars, it's an Etruscan family, because it shows that even the modern scholars will concede that Rome was quasi-Etruscan all the way up to the first century BC. And if you have people who are leading it, like Caesars, who are Etruscan, it's clearly an Etruscan empire, not a Roman one.
You know, I'm actually looking. Have you read the theological lectures from Robert Taylor?
Yeah, I think so. Is that is that Syntagma? Do you remember, do you know what the collection is called? Does it have a title?
Yeah, I'm actually stuck because I don't have a copy, so I'm actually downloading it now. But what people should know about Robert Taylor is if you go to Wikipedia right now, they're going to badmouth him. They're going to say, oh, this charlatan spoke from this ramshackle rotunda, and that bastard even put on robes as if he was part of the tree. You know, they're going to say all these things. But here's the thing. Robert Taylor was educated roughly to a PhD in theology by the Church of Rome. He spoke, what do you think, Dylan? I'm thinking maybe five languages.
I don't know if he was fluent in Hebrew because I've caught him making mistakes in transliteration, but that even I do that. That's really hard. So one of the things that's difficult about Hebrew is depending on the font, some of the letters look the exact same. Like you can't tell if it's a resh or a dalet.
That comes up a lot, people messing up Hebrew. I mean, it's no secret why the Vatican was sneaking, saying bad things about Jews in public and sneaking the rabbis in the back door because they needed them for this very reason to deal with the Old Testament.
And he was in prison, Crow. So it might not have been him. Like it might have been the publisher misreading what he wrote. You know what I mean?
Right. So to finish the story, he's basically somewhere like maybe the equivalent of a PhD. In other words, well-educated in theology by the Roman Church. He's a master orator, which is what got him in, but he's a surgeon. So he was a master orator and a surgeon, and then is compelled into being learned in theology, all right? On top of that, the man knows the sky clock better than I ever will. He'll give you the actual coordinates, the day and the time when this star comes up or that star. And I think it's five languages that he at least has a working knowledge of. Here's what happens. He gets a hold. There's supposedly two copies of the highest Masonic text in Britain. And he gets one of them. I don't think it's ever explained how he gets it. But with that Masonic text, he discovers that everything he's been told is part of a control charade by the Church of Rome. Meanwhile, the other copy goes to four people: the king, a duke, some dude named Carlisle, and another guy I can't remember. So that is the level at which these books are being held. And what he does is he uses the Masonic text to take it apart all the way down to the words in our eye on top of Jesus Christ's cross. He informs the world these are passwords. And they have to do with the four archangels. And I mean, would you add anything, Dylan? But this is the kind of tee up for what the man says.
I want to add something before we get too far removed in it. And then I want to talk about the word Jew because it's important.
Yeah, and that's important father. Too. Yeah.
So just to back you up, when you say things like, the New Testament is written in a different language. It's written in Latin first. So for anyone who disagrees, and I'm telling you, don't do it publicly because it's, you know, Crow and I are functioning as the angel of death to your career right now. Don't do it publicly. I'm warning you. That's the only thing. Archbishop Richard Trench is the one who alerted me to this. He does it in a more subtle and tactful way than Robert Taylor. Robert Taylor will just, he's a man's man. He'll just tell you like it is. He doesn't care what you're going to do about it. And I think that's like the closest to God you can get when you don't care about the consequences.
The truth mattered above all things.
Exactly. Well, if you spell Christian in Greek, most people can't do that because I've done videos that get hundreds of thousands of views on this and people just whine and complain and deny and lie, but they never actually just address the argument. So I'm going to tell you is now, spell Christian in Greek and then tell you, figure out what the problem is. And if you're not disingenuous, you see very clearly that it's a Greek word, right? Kris, which means good, with a Latin termination, anos, Christi anos. This is solely a Latin formed word using a Greek root. They do this all the time, even in the name of Jesus or Bacchus, which functions like IHS or YHS, which you see all over Italy, and they encode it using Greek and Latin words in the same, or Latin, excuse me, Greek and Latin letters in the same word. So only somebody with a certain level of knowledge can know what the heck they're reading. And you think it's English words or Latin letters, but it's not. It's a mixture. So what that is telling you is it's not written in Greek as it's claimed to be. And if you look at the Bible, it says that it's faithfully translated from a Greek original on the title page. It's lying to you on the very first page. Now, you look at these names in the Bible, they're all Latin. You think Luke is a Jewish name or a Greek name? No, it's exclusively Latin. So is Marcus, all of that, right? And one of the things I wanted to talk about, just because you brought it up, is that this is another idea that I think will warrant some research from you and Jason, because you've already touched this subject before. Rome is called Babylon in the Bible. You look at the first book of Peter, I believe it's chapter 5. It's technically verse 13 and 14, but I just want to read it to you because the paragraph starts with verse 12, which is through Silvanus, right? Here's that anos, right? That Latin termination, through Silvanus, to you, the faithful brother, as I reckon, through few words I did write, exhorting and testifying this to be true, the grace of God in which ye have stood, salute you doth the assembly in Babylon, jointly elected. That's the assembly, right? That's the boule, council, the bull, and Marcus, my son. Salute ye one another in a kiss of love. Peace to you all who are in Christ Jesus. Amen. Now, Silvanus, that comes from the Etruscan Selvan. And you can see that in the word savior in Cornish, the Cornish language. Silvans. Silvanus, the savior. And you'll find Selvans inscribed in a caduceus because that's a tool of the savior, right? So all of this is coming from Italy. And if you understand that Babylon is Italy, or there's no other reason they would call it that, or Rome, you're now forced into a position where you have to concede you're dealing with an astronomical text encoded, or if there's any history to it, that Babylon is what Rome was built upon, if you believe in that sort of thing. I don't, because Baba means Father the Most High, Babylon.
Let's try to make a couple points, because whenever we start laying this out, a lot of people who are not ready to take a stern look at what they've been raised up in don't appreciate it. But we're at the time now where information like this should be absolutely offered to people. They can consider it.
By the way, this isn't anything in the universe, the real Universal Empire. So we just got on this because it's me and Crow, and we can't help ourselves.
I don't think we need to stop.
I just want to make sure the book that I'm here today to talk about, it's not that controversial. This is just two gentlemen talking.
Let's just lay out one thing that I think is important to know. Of all the spiritual masters I have been aware of that I think are valid and proven true spiritual masters, every one of them was connected to a religious tradition. And so what that tells you is that true spirituality in any form can win the day, just to be perfectly clear about it. And by the way, Dylan, the name of the book is The Astronomical Theological Lectures of the Reverend Robert Taylor, 1784 to 1844.
I don't know that I've read that unless it was included in one of his other manuscripts.
You can grab it off have archive.
Yeah, I will. You can grab all of this stuff on archive. That's what's great about it.
So one of the things is the language. And the moment that I saw you quoted me, you know, the language is what it, I knew exactly why it meant something to you. And I don't think I'm aware of any author above Robert Taylor that proves the importance of what language can hold. And he even does things like take the name, all the names that end in U.S., right? Marcus and all these. He says, where does that come from? That's not Hebrew, you know? And he does it. But I thought you were going to point out the encoding of the words because I had talked about NRI, but maybe we should shift back over to your book.
Well, I wanted to talk about, this is in my book, back to, you know, NRI. Well, basically, because it's like Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews, you know what I mean? And so going back to that word father, Aita, well, all of this traces back to the Etrusco Phoenician word for the first father, which is in Phoenician, I think it's Priomatar, and in Etruscan, they call it Primus Atar, or first father. Now, they truncated that to become Pi Atar, but that U Primus Atar, you is Italian, Jew, I, you, God. "You primus atar," God the first father. "You primus atar," truncate it, "you patar," Jupiter, Jupiter. And that P atar you'll see on coins. And I don't want to get too technical. This is all, so that's where like my Substack is for the really overwhelming technical analysis with language and imagery and archaeology. But suffice to say that primus atar becomes patar, which becomes, in patar, for those who don't know, is in Greek the word for father, in Latin the word for father, and in Sanskrit the word for father, pitar. This is where Peter comes from, father. Father God, you primus atar, the father, the first father, which is God. You can't do that in Sanskrit. You're not going to find the etymology of that Sanskrit word in India. All of this is demonstrably coming from Italy, not India, as we've been told. And the reason I came to that conclusion, and I towed the party line for, until I was willing to stand in this, is that the oldest inscription in India is the Mangulam inscriptions. And those, if you accept they're real, only date to like 250 BC. And all the stuff I'm talking about is centuries older and in inscriptions in Italy. That's why I, and it's not to say anybody's culture isn't old. If you're alive right now, you are descended from the ancients. Your bloodline is, so it's not talk, I'm not talking about physical people. I'm just talking about this particular system of priestcraft that is used to govern the world and support empires as they go from place to place and set up their systems. It's right where you see it is today. It hasn't shifted because Italy's in the middle of the ocean and it's a maritime empire. And that's what people used to get around before and celestially navigate long before they had the ability to clear forests.
So let's just do this and then move on to kind of wet the whistle of people living. Dylan, do you remember where the Reverend Robert Taylor, first of all, says that the book of Hebrews was written by Masons and that you can't possibly understand it unless you're initiated? And I think he says above the Royal Arch, but he takes four words that we use commonly: Christian, Jew, Israelite, and Hebrew. And he says, we can prove there was never a race of people called Christians. There was never a race of people. In other words, genetically, you can't say Christians, Jews, Israelites, or Hebrews existed. Do you remember what he says about those words being initiation levels?
I'll refresh you. And be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if like the majority of people who call themselves Jews are just like sneaky Italians. Because I think if you look at our DNA, I think like 80% of like Jewish and Italian DNA like matches through the mitochondria.
Well, it makes sense. They're both so very old.
It wouldn't surprise me if they brought up to something sneaky.
So we're running out of time. So let's just lay down the initiation level.
So the first would be Christian. You're a good fellow, right? And so even in Cosa Nostra, that's not, I think as a good fellow, you're not like getting straightened out and becoming like captain or any of that stuff.
It's cannon fodder.
The ranks. So the good fellow, so the Christian, but if you look at it, according that I mean, this is according to Justin Martyr. It's either Justin Martyr or Jerome. I can't remember, but you'll find it in their work. They admit why they're called that. We chose that. It's a pun. We call ourselves Christians because we are the best of men. And so then there's Jew. Then there is Israelite. And then there's Hebrew. And that means you've passed over the Hebraic Rees.
The Royal Arch.
Yeah. And the Jews call themselves Ivri, but it's actually spelled, it begins with an ayin, which if you're going to admit that I took that from Phoenician, that's an O. So it should be, it looks like Obri, Ayin, Beit, Resh, Yud, not Ivri. But you see that B and V, Beit and Veit change. That's what they're doing. And this, and knowing language will help you decipher what you're looking at. But that initiatory process is a product of the modern system. And people hate on Freemasons, but Freemasons are Christian. All the Masonic, and it goes back to somewhat of the ancient world, but the fact that they used the G, and the G wasn't introduced to the Italian world till 230 BC, shows it's a product of somewhere that starts up around that change, that age change, and or that, excuse me, that common era change. And they all practiced in the bowels of the churches and cathedrals. And the earliest, I think the earliest account of them in the, at least the cathedral at York, is in the 10th century. That's when they started like recording their meetings and stuff. but they existed long before that. They're part of the priesthood. They're part of Christianity. You had to be one of them to know how to build the temples in accordance with the cycles of nature. That's the real function of temples. They're astronomical because the priests are astrologers and astronomers. And so astrology has gotten a bad word, but I think this is why the status quo is so terrible in their conclusions, is because they dismiss astrology and the significance it has with mythology and how important that is to rank, just like language. It's a forensic thing. Like, it doesn't have to be true. You don't have to accept it's real. But when you know what somebody uses or how they speak, it betrays the time that they were created. They created those words in, even if it's a lie. So the same goes with mythology. If you know what people believed or used as mythological figures during that time, you can date the artifacts that you're looking at.
All right, we've got to start wrapping. Dylan, in the chat, I put a link to that Taylor text so you can download it. And just to make it perfectly clear, what was said there, and I think it's in reference to the book of Hebrews, Taylor does all these evidence to show that the book of Hebrews was written by a mason.
Epistle.
Epistle above the Royal Arch. And then he talks about the initiation levels, lowest Christian, next Jew, next Israelite. When you get Hebrew, you have gone, you've been trained or initiated above the Royal Arch. And I think he's claiming that you would have to be initiated at that level above Hebrew to read the book of Hebrews. But whatever you want to make of these things, let me just make one quick point before we wrap up hour one and prep for hour two. Everyone is familiar with masonry. So I'll ask you a question. Do you think that the Masons hold on to important bits of information that they're not sharing with anyone? And how could they be so powerful if that wasn't true? But every temple that you see that is a Masonic temple is meant to replicate the temple from Israel. You know, the one that lasted about 40 years. After it was at Shiloh, it went to be that temple. It supposedly lasted about 40 years, but the Sistine Chapel is echoing that temple idea. Every Masonic temple, but what do you know about Masonic temples? They're always aligned to the sky clock, specifically solstices and equinoxes. When you go inside, often there will be stars on the ceiling. So for those who look at what Robert Taylor tried to prove to everyone, all you need to do is look at a Masonic temple to comprehend that there is an absolute correlation between this group of people who claim to be Christians, who use the Bible in everything they do, and then everything sky clock is integrated into what they build and what they do. Anyhow, Dylan, tell folks where they can find your work and your current book.
Yeah, so it's called The Real Universal Empire. Search for it. You can find it on pretty much every major platform if it's credible. Read that first. It's really inexpensive for a book. Just go read the sample. Go read the first chapter for free. If you like it and you want more technical analysis, everything I'm doing from now on is at substack.com. So it's Great Tide, GreatTide.substack.com. That's where I'm doing all, like, I'm not, this is like the last, like, you guys made the cut, but I'm not doing, I don't want to be in the public anymore because I don't need to be, because I have an audience. So everything I'm doing is private from podcasts. We just started our own private podcast for just our paid members. So it's all of that. And I've been narrating this book. So I'm not doing an audio book for it on the major platforms. It's only at Substack. It's also visual. So a lot of this stuff, I'll show you the locations. I'll show you the artifacts so you can see it for yourself. So for those who are Substack members, they get The Real Universal Empire for as part of the package. And it's audio visual. And I include the digital text so you can use it as a reference or an index to key search words you didn't know or that you want to further explore on your own. Again, that's at greattide.substack.com. And thank you, Crow, for having me back on. I'm excited to get into the second hour.
All right, Jason, anything you want to add before we wrap hour one?
Well, when we get into hour two, can you address whatever similarities there are between the ancient Greek language and whatever they spoke in ancient Rome, which I'm assuming is at least some form of Latin?
Yeah, of course.
All right, we'll open up with that idea. And I will close as we wrap up hour one of episode 577 with Dylan Scoccio, Jason Lindgren. So few people who claim to be Christians have even read the Bible. And by the way, in the book of Job, we are informed that the Pleiades, you know, the star cluster, the seven sisters, sometimes called, with a big blue reflection nebula in front of it, we're informed that they are sweet influences. In the same text, you are asked if you could unloose the belt of Orion, and then the Maseroth is brought up. All these references to the sky clock, God's clock, the clock of the creation, were carefully scrubbed out of almost everything. And it is true that ancient Jewish temples used to have zodiacal tile work. And now it's illegal to have anything sky clock near your religion. With that, we're going to prep up for hour two. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full two-hour episode. Members get access to all the forums. They can create their own forums, all the comments sections, and they can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon anytime they like. And as of this coming Monday, I am filming again, and I will be posting everything that is interesting that I will be releasing only to membership on crow777radio.com. We're going to prep up for hour two, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. I hope to see you logged in as a member for the second half of this. It'll be interesting. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.